Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Mike Force Podcast. This is my personal podcast. This is where I like to run my mouth about certain things that need to be ran about. Hey, I want to do this podcast on training and culture. Had planned this previously. It was on my list and then added it to the top based on some things that were sent to me of recent. Look, social media, I don't get into the drama of social media. There's a whole bunch of it, obviously. It's a toxic place for people to capitalize, and there's only winners and losers, and the people who win typically are making a profit. The people who lose are typically and profoundly in their own lives regurgitating and vomiting that kind of toxicity. And so I don't like it. I don't like it a lot. I spend probably, I think I actually tracked this recently. I spend an average of 20 minutes online on Instagram every single day on average, because that's how much I spend in committing, where I say I'm going to do a post and then I'm going to answer the DMs and then I'm checked out and then it's on to running a business. For those who don't know me, my name is Mike Glover. I own a company called Philcraft Survival. I own several companies, but Philcraft Survival is my primary company that I own. I started Philcraft Survival in 2015 in a shipping container in Pakistan, where I was living at the time as a contractor for the U.S. government and also part-timing as a sergeant major in 19th Special Forces Group. My entire life, since the age of 17, I've been in the realm of counterterrorism, special operations, the infantry, a stint in the infantry, and have a bachelor's degree in crisis response and homeland security. I have a second bachelor's degree, actually, in criminal justice. But, you know, this is 20 years of experience in 2015 at the time, and decided, hey, I want to do something different with my life. It's real easy. Like, this is not sustainable. I want to have a family, and having a family and deploying all the time isn't realistic. So I said, I'm going to check out. I'm going to resign my position and start my own business. And Philcraft Survival was that business. So Philcraft Survival, from the onset, has all been about training civilians. It's been the original mission statement, because I could have very easily trained FBI, federal government, military, law enforcement, the same thing that I was kind of immersed in. I mean, on active duty as a special operations guys, we are often tasked to go train and interoperate with different agencies and different units. When I was a team sergeant in the Commander's Response Force in Fort Carson, Colorado, in C-210, which, if you don't know what it is, it's the unit, but if you do, you'd know. I stood that unit up. I mean, I got it validated. I was the validation requirement for the reconnaissance element there. And I used to train part-time and train law enforcement in the local area, as well as interagency. Like, I trained the regional SWAT team there, did a whole bunch of cool stuff. So it's something that's part of my DNA. I mean, when I was 18 years old, I was a guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, training other guards, like assessing them, recruiting them. And I was an E4, you know, specialist in the Army. And I was training other E6s and E7s. These are platoon sergeants in the infantry, and trying to assess them to determine if they're going to be capable of going through the arduous process of becoming a tomb guard. I also went to Ranger School at a very young age, so understood small unit leadership and tactics and was successful in that. And, you know, every step along the way, including being a 20-year-old sergeant in the infantry that was airborne and Ranger qualified, had my tomb identification badge, and won the leadership award in my E5 leadership school. I'm trying to drive home the point that my entire life has been around training, and also training civilians. My first rotation as a Green Beret, young Green Beret at 24 years old, was turning civilians in Afghanistan into a defensive force capable of defending themselves against Taliban and potentially at the time Al-Qaeda elements. So doing this and recruiting, assessing, and selecting them, and then conducting operations with them was very impactful for me. So, you know, fast forward 9 rotations in war and multiple rotations in the interagency element of the U.S. government, I realized that I had enough experience, but I wanted to step away and I wanted to capitalize on that experience, and I wanted to train civilians. My first mission statement was train citizens to be better prepared for the worst case scenario since the onset. So it's surprising to me that of recent, several social media influencers, including a very known civilian social media influencer, has decided to target me. I'm not surprised by that. Insecurities on social media are easily demonstrable. Typically in stories and posts, people who constantly talk about other people who are very divisive, and this person's been divisive for years, are typically the people who are the most insecure and not focused on their mission. And I always see that as a flaw in people. If somebody is coming out and they're spending a lot of time talking about other people, then they're not spending enough time focused on their objective or their mission. Look, I used to mentor this kid. He used to text me and call me, and I used to give him advice years ago when I was new to social media on how to navigate some of these social dilemmas. So I am surprised at his unprofessionalism, but let me lay out the context of what he said. In paraphrasing, because I don't want to quote him verbatim because it wouldn't make sense in trying to establish context. He basically says that you and several other people are profiting off of civilians, but not taking or heeding the advice because you're attacking or talking crap about civilians, something like that. So basically, if you're talking crap about civilians and how they wear kit and how they do their thing, and then you're profiteering off of them, that it's toxic and it's bad. And it was in a story, and it was really weak, and it was really unprofessional. So, and he used my name, first and last name, verbatim. So if you're not read into the controversy, I'll read you into it to create context for allowing you to understand, one, the company's philosophy, Fieldcraft Survival, but also my personal philosophy on this and the detriment it is to not only to our society, but also to our constitutional rights. Look, one, I don't want this to be a rant. I don't like that. Two, I want this to be the long form comprehensive discussion. Again, people who are insecure and weak, they'll attack people on social media because it's easy in a couple characters to put that out in the world, but it's at the detriment to our society. It's at the detriment to our understanding of how things work. And I don't like that. So let's lay some context. About 2 weeks ago, I don't know the date because I don't track this again. Medal of Honor recipient, former Marine, once a Marine, always a Marine, I guess, Dakota Meyer said something on a podcast regarding civilians, cool guys who wear kit and then show pictures of themselves on Instagram and all this different kind of stuff. And said that they're LARPers, they're fake warriors, keyboard, whatever the verbiage was. I haven't listened to it. I haven't watched it. The only reason I know it's a thing is because I saw Tim Kennedy's post, which I listened to a couple seconds of it. And then I had a podcast with Tim. So in the podcast, we talked about those comments and then in the context, what it means. So let me back up just a little bit. Last year in July, almost a year ago, I started a group called American Contingency because I knew that people were looking for answers. Yeah, it wasn't about money. In fact, I wanted it to be free, but the platform we hosted on made us charge $5 a month. $5 a month. So when we set it up, the idea was, hey, we need to give people an understanding and an education about how this works and allow them to capitalize on their community. And standing up, you know, I did a video called Get Off the Bench on YouTube, standing up, being leaders in their community, and then joining their assets and their skill sets together to better protect themselves. Because at the time, and still ongoing in certain places like Portland, Oregon, the government, whether it's local or federal, has decided to not enforce laws. And so in some places throughout the United States, mostly major metropolitan areas, there was lawlessness. There were innocent human beings being killed by protesters, in quotations, that were violently attacking them and killing them. I mean, this is not me amplifying or exaggerating here. This literally happened in our country. The federal building in Portland, Oregon, for example, was attacked multiple times, and it's been ongoing for a year. I talked to federal agents who work in that building today, and it's still being attacked. People are peeing and defecating and throwing Molotov cocktails and taking pictures and videos of federal agents coming and going that work in that building. So completely out of control, and I wanted to create a group. So in creating a group, which is like a social project, let's just a social experiment, where you have an unknown platform and its interface, and you're bringing people together and you're allowing them to interact, I thought was a positive thing until it started. Now, let's talk about woke culture. Woke culture is typically associated with extreme leftists who are trying to be woke, cancel and destroy people and their businesses because of their ideology. One snippet of information, one opinion, they are being destroyed. And here's where the breakdown happens. So now, not only do we have the radical left who is attacking guys like me, guys who have served their country, which that doesn't entitle me to anything, but in the context of me operating my business and trying to help people, I'm not an extremist. I'm just a normal guy who served his country, who's trying to do good for the country. I'm not an extremist. I get attacked by leftists, but also by what so-called conservatives, so-called Republicans, so-called, and what they more likely are is extremists, radicals, whatever the title that you want to give them, that's what they are. Because they were saying things like, why are you profiteering off Americans? Well, I didn't realize that profiteering was, by the way, giving 15% of $5 a month per person on a platform that requires me to charge $5 per person to bring people together. Because how do you on social bring people together? I talked to the application that's Locals, who's ran by a former Israeli defense officer who understands security, that said, hey, this is a protected place. You're not going to get canceled. You're not going to get shut down. And then what I started getting in the fall of last year, this is September, October, realizing we're in the middle of COVID, is I say, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to communicate and I'm going to meet with people. Well, COVID allowed me not to do that. That's a weird way of saying it, but basically I couldn't do anything. I mean, even places that are more conservative, like Montana, that were hosting me, started canceling me because they were afraid to get shut down, because they were violating whatever their local laws and then the federal implementation of those laws. And so churches, for example, that I wanted to go to were canceling on me last minute because they didn't want to get in trouble. And nothing to do with American Contingency's political stance, which we weren't political, but everything to do with, hey, we don't want to get in trouble because you have 100 people coming together. If the federal whatever finds out that this is happening, we'll get shut down, we'll get fined, and we don't want this drama. So we had to take a step back and do more stuff online. But the attacks didn't stop. Now, they call me a white supremacist, the left did, a racist. They affiliated with me and these groups like the Proud Boys and all these guys who are extreme. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting because we're not extreme. In fact, no messages that we put out were extreme, except the right extremist started attacking us and saying, I thought Mike was going to take us to war, literally verbatim. How come Mike isn't taking us to war? I thought we were going to fight the leftist mob. And then I'm like, wow, where am I? And let's take a step back and discuss a couple things. Okay. One, I am an American. I am proud to be an American. I'm an American before anything else. Before I'm an Asian American, before I'm a veteran, before any kind of persona or title, sex or creed, I'm an American. My father met my mother in Korea when he was stationed there. My grandfather served in Vietnam. My great-grandfather served in World War II. My great-great-great-great-grandfather was a general in the Civil War. So I come from a long line of service, which is the majority, by the way, of service members who derive from families who serve this nation. I'm a patriot through and through. But I also understand the sacrifices and also the cost of war. Like, when you ask me what political affiliation I am, when I served, it didn't matter what political affiliation you were, because you were fighting side by side men that you were going downrange with, and in the understanding of what you were involved in, it was the lowest of priorities. I served under the Obama era, almost the full term of Obama. And when you look at Obama and all of the things that I did under the Obama administration, I served and did so without making it political. If you ask me my personal political stance, I'm conservative, but I'm also not extreme, meaning I have balance. I want to communicate. I want to legislate. I want to follow law and order, but there's some things that I don't agree with, like late-term abortions. In fact, part of me, which this is evolving because I'm trying to understand it more, I don't like abortions, period, unless you were raped or violently assaulted or attacked in the course of intercourse and made pregnant. And I don't think life should be terminated, but that would make me extreme from the left's perspective, but that would make me moderate potentially because I'm not completely pro-life from the right's perspective. So what am I? I don't know. I consider myself a moderate. I'm a libertarian, most definitely, who believes in the Constitution and individual liberty in the truest sense. I want less government because I understand how broken government is because I worked for the government my entire adult life leading into my transition into civilian. So when I see people interact because of the immersion in technology, I notice a lot of trends. One, we don't have conversations anymore. There is no conversation that takes place to understand perspective. It's only snapshot judgments and then trying to destroy somebody via your platform. And that's what's happening here, right? That's what happened with this social media influencer, in quotations and sarcastic, that decides to put me on blast. And I think it's funny. I think it's funny because to affect me, one, you have to know me. You have to be in my circle. You have to understand my business. And you have to understand in context comprehensively who I am and what I do. And that's not the case. It's all snapshot judgments. Just like Black Rifle Coffee, when Evan Hafer decided to donate $500 to Tulsi Gabbard. So he goes from a person who is held in high esteem as one of the fastest and most aggressive growing businesses affecting culture with Black Rifle Coffee Company to becoming a turncoat and being canceled by conservative right. We've looked into it. I've had conversations with Evan. It wasn't just conservative right. It was leftist mob actors who wanted to destroy Evan, to cancel him. And it was also people from the far right that were jumping on the bandwagon, and probably moderates as well, who are influenced so much in their lives by their cell phones. That's what we're talking about here, guys. We're not talking about influence by personalities and conversations and understanding. We're talking about people influenced and controlled, manipulated by their cell phones. That's scary to me. That is super scary to me. Because the question is, if you're willing to write off a company, right? A company, which, by the way, happens to be a majority of veterans in the population of 500 plus employees and growing, and you're willing to cancel that and then jump on the bandwagon of vocalizing that you need to cancel it, and then everybody else is jumping on that bandwagon and getting them out of mainstream stores because of it and canceled by popular culture, and you're destroying people's lives in your comments because you don't want to listen to the context. You don't want to have a conversation. So now we've accepted this in social media space. We've accepted it. We say, okay, look, Evan Hafer, who is a patriot. I served with him in the government. He served in special operations and adjacent units. He has been in the military almost his entire life, serving his country and still doing so by giving back to first responders and veterans. And he's one of the most caring and giving human beings I know. And we decided to write him off because he made $500 in donation to Tulsi Gabbard, who I happened to respect and hold in high regard as a veteran herself, a veteran of war, who is moderate, who's not an extremist, who has very calculated and intelligent views about the world. Now, some of the policy things that she advertises, I don't agree with, but we don't have to agree in order for me to look at a person and go, I support you, versus the extreme radicals that are in our politics, political system now, including the current administration. So fast forward and we get through the Black Rifle Coffee thing. And I'm noticing this trend of people trying to cancel, not only leftist extremists trying to cancel in woke culture, people that don't agree with them, but also these extreme right individuals who decide the same. Call them what you, whatever the terms are. There's some terms. I don't even want to repeat them because they're corny, but let's break that out. So the Dakota Meyer thing happens, and there's a discussion about Dakota Meyer, and he talks about these actors and emulators, or he uses the word LARPer. Now, a LARPer is somebody who pretends to be something they're not. Now, let's break this out a little bit, because this is my philosophy. So for years, I have been talking about how I don't like people who pretend to be at war, who don't understand, one, tactics, planning, operations, or the cost of war. So let's break this down for Dakota. Now, this is my philosophy, because I feel the same way. Now, imagine you go through an experience like losing all your mates downrange, and you earn the Medal of Honor because you go above and beyond in heroism and saving as many men as you can. But a lot of his teammates died. He beat to death a person with a rock, right? So imagine all the trauma that is associated with this. And when you look at the context of what a civilian who pretends to be something they're not, and then how that opinion could be translated from his perspective. So if we just take a step back and go, man, if my teammates were killed, and then I was looking in social media where you saw a lot of people who are definitively LARPing. Like, look, listen, let's not pretend that on social media people don't do this to become popular. That people don't do this to become popular. Because according to this social media influencer, the reason he does it is to make people better prepared. He actually uses some of my phraseology. That wasn't his original mission statement, by the way. It was selling holsters. But now it's about preparedness. I was on that bandwagon when he was talking about inside the waistband, because we're dealing with, especially now, an acceleration in crime throughout the United States based on mostly Democratic policies in inner cities and metropolitan areas where crime is going through the roof. There's economic collapse. There's a whole bunch of socioeconomic issues that are causing this, but you need to be better prepared in defending yourself. But then there's a business strategy here, right? Because if you're selling a belt or a kit and you're running around on a flat range, emulating or pretending, then you're going to become popular. Let me give you the example. If you take a picture of a gun and you put it on social media, and you maybe next to kit or some cool, sexy photo, and then you take a picture of a tourniquet, what's going to do better? Well, of course, the gun's going to do better. The tourniquet won't do well. Why? Because it's not popular. So let me try to create some illustrated points for you. The business of the motorsports industry, let's just say it's the car industry. So when you go to the Chevy dealership and you go to look at the different vehicles they have there, and they have a Chevy Cobalt, which is a piece of crap car. And then they have a Chevy Z06 supercar sitting next to it. What do you want to be? Well, marketeers will try to sell you on being or having experience as a race car driver. Why? Because being a soccer mom doesn't sell as well as becoming a race car driver. Because in these sports, there's an industry where they push and test and innovate space and competing against each other. That's what the motorsports industry is about. It's about sponsors, it's about business, it's about profits, but it's also about taking industries and competing and trying to be better. But when you go to the dealership, you want to feel like a race car driver. So you get inside of a Z06 that goes a 0-60 in a few seconds, that does a quarter mile in 11 seconds, and that's a supercar. But based on the law, can you drive that supercar on the streets like a supercar? You can't. But when you're in it, you feel that way. So that's the capitalization and marketing on an experience. So when a video game like Call of Duty comes out and you get to pretend to be an operator and you get to run around in these places that are virtual scenes of war, the expectation is you're pretending to be that. We're pretending here, but there's a stark contrast between pretending and what that actually is and means. So the difference between the two examples that I gave you is, one, there is no loss in motorsports and pretending to be a race car driver besides the potential accident. But there is huge cost and loss in lives and sacrifice in what it is to be or pretend to be an operator. So there is a small demographic of operators, me not included, by the way, who are offended by this. I don't care. If you want to go in your backyard, like I was advertising and advocating for Airsoft, for example, because I think it's a great training tool as long as it's treated with respect. Like if you're pointing an Airsoft gun at your buddy's face just to do it, then that's the wrong precedence and habits that we're building. But if you want to capitalize on the gun handling, on the decision-making, then there's something there. So there's a difference between a sport and a life or death circumstance that's catastrophic because human beings can't work shit out and people die. People die. 40,000 civilians in Iraq have been killed. 3,500 plus coalition forces dead. And I can't, let's not talk about Syria and Yemen and Afghanistan and more and more and more, where more people have been killed. So when we take a step back and we look at what it means to be pretending, what are you benefiting from? So you see a guy running around a range with night vision on his head with an ops core helmet and a plate carrier. Can you do that? Yes, it's America. You can do that. But why would he do that? Well, one, because it's popular. It's a strategy in business. You don't think they're looking at analytics? So if we looked at actually looking at things that kill people and we were creating a business, even around the 2A community, around the Second Amendment, then why would we focus on something as far as statistical probabilities is like one in trillions? I mean, it's probably not even registerable. You probably can't even comprehend the likelihood of that happening. Meaning, what is the likelihood of you donning body armor, a helmet and nods, and fighting by yourself, because that's what it is. There's no team tactics, small unit tactics, planning and operational tactics. It's all about a singleton attack. And the justification for it is to fight tyranny. And herein lies one of the problems that's being created in this space. One, you have divisive people like this social media influencer attacking veterans because they don't want to have the conversation. Instead of saying, hey, Dakota Meyer, I would love to have a conversation with you on social so I could hear your points of view and debate and talk about that. Instead of doing that, it's I'm going to attack you and then take my tribe of people who like me and then get on the bandwagon to attack you. And that's what's going on now, which thank God I'm not privy to these social media wars. One, it's a waste of time, but two, it's petty. But three, we learn nothing from it. So now let's take it at face value. You have the idea that the Second Amendment is there to protect tyranny. What's my philosophy? I'm in agreement with that. I don't think the Second Amendment has anything to do with hunting and sports shooting, has everything to do with balancing the powers of people and the government. I know because I've lived this life overseas and saw how that translates when you empower people. I stood up the first counterterrorism force in Libya. Me and two of my guys by ourselves, me and George stood in front hundreds of Libyans and recruited and assessed them and literally broke them down in their task org over coffee, reestablishing their abilities, civilians, to fight for their country and protect themselves. So I understand it. I get it. But does that mean that we have to prepare for war against our government? Because let's break that down or break it out. How does that translate? So let's say the government says that we're going to fight our own. People are worried about gun confiscation, which will never happen in this country. We don't even have the manpower to do that. And by the way, you're talking to somebody who's worked for the government, right? Who's seen the breakdown in allocations of resources at the most narrow levels of governance. So the idea is the government's going to attack us and we need to be prepared. If you're advertising that, then you have a very skewed understanding of the government and of reality. Because we operate in the United States, decentralized in the way that we govern and our populations are controlled. I live in the great state of Utah. So what's the likelihood of Washington, D.C. enacting policy that sends its thousands of agents across the United States in a full-scale war? I can't comprehend the tactical strategy there. And I do this for a living. I did it as a sergeant major in Africa fighting Boko Haram. Like, I do this for a living. You give me a whiteboard and I could lay out and plan the strategy of every major conflict and war at the tactical level. I mean, that's what I do for a living. And I can't come to a comprehensive understanding of how that would line itself out. So does that mean that you can't do it? No, I think you can do it. In fact, I don't care if you do it because that's the greatness that is our country. But what does it say about you as a business owner, as an influencer, rolling my eyes in the back of my head, that's influencing people to attack veterans and then focus on something that's not even statistically likely, that's not going to benefit people? Look, how many times I operated in semi-permissive environments. You know how many times I went overt, meaning putting on a plate carrier and a helmet and nods and fought with a carbine running and gunning? Never. You know why? Because in semi-permissive environments, you don't want to go overt. You want to maintain clandestine or surreptitious or low-vis signature representation in that environment. So why would you do that in the first place? You wouldn't. But again, the people who are naysayers would hear me say that and go, well, Mike doesn't know what he's talking about. But a 20-something-year-old kid who started a kydex business does know what he's talking about. Again, if you're listening to this and you're a naysayer, I appreciate you listening to me. But I want you to understand me. And if you're on board the Phil Kraft train, the Mike train, then I'm appreciative of your support. But I also want you to understand the comprehensive understanding and the potential fallout of what this means leading into our future. So this kid attacks Dakota Meyer on social. Why? Because it's simply popular. Look, this kid's MO throughout the history of his business has been to do this exact same thing. I can't even fathom a CEO who runs a business. I have 40 employees. And the most you'll see me get wrapped around things is in this context. But I can't imagine somebody who would get so wrapped around content and attacking other people that they would have the energy and the wherewithal to focus and make change moving forward and propelling the company. It's a sure sign of weak leadership and getting more people on the bandwagon. And I'm sure what will happen is he'll listen to this, he'll take offense, and then he'll be reactive, and then he'll put my name on blast, which I don't care, because I know what I'll be doing. And this is the contrast. I started my company. I train 10,000 people a year. Raul Martinez and our subcontractors who are tactical instructors, who are vetted, train all over the United States. Phil Kraft HQ does seminars, teaches med, does all these things working in statistical probabilities. 35% of all of our training isn't even firearms training. It's mindset, situational awareness. It's first aid and stop the bleed. It's how do you make a decision under stress that's going to save your life? It's gun handling. It's working from the concealed. It's understanding how a gunfight works in the first place in defense of your life or your family's life or your community's life. But when you take that business model, there's a lot of offense taken because we're profiting off of civilians. Yes, it's called a business. And I don't consider myself a military guy. I'm a civilian. I live a civilian life. And so what this person wants to do is create a divide because he wants you on his team. I don't care what team you're on. I want you to hear the information and how we train civilians and make you understand the gravity of what you're doing and wasting time going the other direction. Should you own body armor, nods, a helmet, etc.? Completely up to you. If you want to do that, that's completely up to you. I train civilians in night vision classes. If they have night vision, there is a distinct and very profound advantage in having night vision and defending your life. You live on a rural in a rural area where, you know, you might come out of your house and might have 50 acres surrounding you. Well, if you have night vision and you're trying to establish where potential threats are, it's a huge advantage. But again, it's built around statistical probabilities and the likelihood of the biggest threat to you. If we create a system of businesses and people who think that they have to come out of the woodwork to fight, for example, the Capitol Hill circumstance, to fight for freedom, and that means putting on a costume, raiding the Capitol Hill building, and showboating on the platform on social media, is that what this means? It shouldn't. Now, the best thing this social media influencer did is advocating for Second Amendment rights. And people have actually asked me, like, why aren't you doing that? How the fuck do you think I'm not? Like, we do that. One, I don't have to advertise it because it's not part of my business plan, because I don't like to get political when it comes to my business, because that's very personal to me. But that's something that personally I do on my own. So if I hire a liberal out of San Francisco who's a great data kid and he works numbers and does all this stuff, and I tell him, stand behind my company that's politically affiliated, and if you don't, sorry, you got to go. Is that right? I don't think so, because that's the benefit of freedoms in America. But if I personally want to do that on my own, I will do that. So there's this new trend in this space that has drawn the line in the sand where you have to be politically affiliated as a company and take a stance or not, and we'll cancel you. Insane. Like, people are like, why do you support Patagonia? Well, I like their clothing. Well, their clothing's made overseas. So is everything you're wearing. Like, literally everything you're wearing. The camouflage that you're wearing, hunting, made in China. In fact, most of the things that you buy, 80% of everything you buy is made in China. So what else you got? Well, they're liberal and they don't support veterans. Well, I actually was issued 15 years ago. I was issued Patagonia cold weather gear, and Patagonia still makes special operations gear. So are they anti-veteran? Because they're making equipment, and some of it's the best equipment I ever wore. They're making equipment for special operations. Well, they seem like they're left extremist. Well, are they or are they not? And is that going to determine your consumer choices? Like, I like to make good decisions as a consumer, but I don't base that off of a sentence. I don't base it off of not understanding the big picture. So when it comes to advocacy, we just got the sheriff, not me personally, but my company or some of my company employees and myself, who volunteered to do this, advocated for the ordinance to protect this area, which is my county in Wasatch County, to be a Second Amendment protected sanctuary county. In the ordinance, it means it's written in law. Based on the sheriff's willingness to proceed with the ordinance and then the city council to vote on it. That was profound. We were involved in that. But am I going to advertise that on my social media feed? I'm not, because my business shouldn't be a political business, because my mission statement is to prepare civilians for the worst case scenario as individuals, as families. So we run this line, right? So when I say somebody's an emulator or a troll, or I guess the best word is LARPer, what do I mean by that? Well, here's the big misunderstanding of how this works. So I see a lot of these videos of these kids running around a flat range with nods and a rifle. And I've actually heard like people say, well, he's a better shooter than you. Well, one, I don't even know if that's true because I'm a really good shooter. I'm not the best in the world, but I'm pretty good. I mean, I've competed in the most profound sniper competitions in the U.S. and international military and have done very well. I haven't assessed it recently, but I could probably get myself to a pistol grandmaster and a couple months of rehearsal and rehearsing the stages from the USPSA. Like, it wouldn't be that difficult to do. I'm competent with a firearm because I do it for a living and I take it very seriously. So the question is, when you put kit on and you run around a flat range, is that indicative of what you would see in war? And it is definitively and inarguably no. It is not. Because you see, choreographed scripts and how you execute the scripts in movement only has to do with ergonomics and efficiency. Human, physical, moving dynamics. Like it's not hard to do that. Like if you take an Olympic athlete, for example, and you're looking at efficiency, those that win gold are the most efficient. Whether it's their mindset that's holding together that efficiency, their individual movements, the genetics of their body in those movements, acceleration, fast twitch muscles, endurance, the list goes on. The combination of all those things make them profound. But how much does that translate to war? And the answer is not really a lot. Now, there's technical proficiency, meaning the way that you move in and around an area. So if I have a target and I have targets set up in different areas and it's my own flat range and I rehearse the placement of where this gun needs to go in space and in time, footwork, efficiency, economy, then that's profound. I mean, credit where credit's due. Good on you for being super efficient. But what does that have to do with war? Not really a lot. Is it beneficial? Yes, absolutely. But the difference in war is you're missing cognition. One, you're missing planning, rehearsals, interoperability, communications, first aid, how you're interacting with teammates, battle drills, FM7-8, small unit tactics, raids, ambushes, choreographed movements, the understanding of how operations work on the ground, considerations for kit and environments. There's so many considerations. So when it comes to the technical aspects of literally breaking the trigger on bad guys, that's the easy part, guys. That's the easy part. Let me give you an example because I want to drive this home. So when I started teaching self-defense, it's easy to teach people how to shoot guns. That's the easiest thing. Like I literally do it for a living and interoperate with the best instructors in the world. The best in the world. And so when you take an understanding of learning and teaching, that is what you have to grasp primarily. Because you could be a profound shooter, technically proficient, and because you don't know how to teach or disseminate or communicate that information to your clientele, which come from all different walks of life in civilian space, then are you really that good? I would say no, but let's just say that for the sake of the argument, let's keep talking about it. So if I'm looking to be better at instructing and I want to teach civilians, what do I need to teach them first and foremost? Is it how to manipulate the gun out of the holster and break a shot? Because what am I getting them set up for? I started experimenting with this scenario where I took people and I said, hey, I'm going to walk you through a story. And then as I'm walking you through the story, I want you to turn when you meet the criteria to engage a threat. I want you to turn and shoot the target with Sims. We typically do it with Sims. So they're standing, they're facing me, and I tell them sometimes to close their eyes, and I'm taking them through a scenario. So I want you to think about this. So you're in your house, and you hear a noise, and it sounds like your front door. You recognize it because you've heard your front door open a million times. You know what it sounds like. And then you walk out into the living room with a pistol in your hand, and you see a dark, shadowy figure because there's ambient light, but there's contrast of the outline of the person contrasted with the ambient light against the wall. So you recognize it as being a person, a man, a large man. And you look at him and you hold the gun in your hand because you're prepared to defend your life. And you see what looks to be a gun in his hand. And immediately people will turn and they'll shoot the target. And then I continue the scenario because those people have made the decision. They're out of the story. They've already changed history for themselves. Then I say, you turn on the light to confirm what you're potentially shooting at. And you flip on the light and there's a 14-year-old kid that you recognize as your neighbor's son. And in his right hand, he has a pistol. And then you get more people who turn and shoot. And then he looks at you and says, Mr. Glover, I'm sorry. This is an airsoft gun. I was returning it to your son. And I didn't want to get in trouble. So I wanted to sneak in. He told me to come in and I'm just leaving it for him. And then the scenario ends. And then I ask people, and arguably people say, hey, well, that's not a lot of information. Well, how do you think it works in real life? You only get slivers of the pie in information under stress. So one, if you're not stress inoculated and you're not controlling stress, then you're getting overwhelmed because you're in a sympathetic nervous state and you're not taking in that information. But these guys who run around the range, are they in a fight or flight state? Are they controlling their stress? No, because there's no stress. There's no stress when you run around choreographed on your own flat range. You know where there is stress? A competition where you have no control, where you don't control the placement of the targets, where you'll get procedurals and you'll get disqualified for making the wrong decisions because that's how this world works. Because there isn't a solution that you implement unless you're breaking shots on bad guys, but there's a lead up in the decision point that takes place leading up to that very technical and very easy thing to do. I've killed lots of bad guys in my day. It's not hard to be technically proficient once you've made the decision. But how are you making the decisions? What psychology or what state of psychology are you in at the time that you're breaking the shots? And how are you interoperating by running around? I usually illustrate this point in talking about the gauntlet. You're running through a gauntlet of shooting steel and paper fast, demonstrating your speed, showing the pro timer on the camera how badass you are. But is that a correlation to how badass you are? Because what scenario would you be in where you're running around and you're shooting like a zombie apocalypse without first identifying the target and shot process? When you bring a gun up on a threat, how do you know it's a threat? Well, there's something called the shot process that takes place where you analyze information. So in proficiency in a game, in a sport, then everything is called bad. It's the IPSC IDPA target that's brown or white, and you consider it bad, so you just shoot it. But that, again, isn't how this works. Because when you bring up a gun on a person, you have to assess if it's a threat. And even in a place, which is war, where we even establish that there's threats. I mean, I've landed on targets where the entire target set, they say everybody on this target is an Al-Qaeda operative, and you get there, and you still have to discriminate. So you go up, hands up, and you discriminate. Well, what happens in discrimination? Well, you assess the target. How do you assess the target? Typically, you look at hands. You might look at demeanor. You might look at both. And then you have to make a snapshot decision whether or not that's an imminent threat, an immediate threat, or a threat at all, identifying friend and foe. And at the same time, you have to rapidly evolve. You have to continue to move. You have to discriminate again and again. And then you have to set yourself up for success. And how does that work? Well, it doesn't work running a gauntlet like it's the zombie apocalypse. So again, a complete misrepresentation of how you would operate. So let's talk about the decision point leading up to that point, why you would make that decision, and then what the life-changing events that would transpire. So imagine you're in the scenario where I put you through it and you shot your neighbor that was 14 years old, who had an airsoft pistol and had a text sent to your son that he was returning the airsoft pistol and you killed him, you gunned him down. One, do you take that seriously? Because I do. Using deadly force against a human being, specifically an American citizen in this country, I take very seriously. One, the ramifications of you making the wrong decision are life-altering. Because you will go to jail for the rest of your life. You will also, in that decision, if you make the wrong decision, potentially get injured, killed, or lose a family or friend, and or. So how seriously do I take this? Very seriously, which is why all my instructors are vetted, which is why we talk about legal arguments, decision points, and we treat this very seriously. So when I have the passion in me, which I do right now, I'm very passionate right now, I want you to understand that this isn't a fucking game. But they'll make it a game, which is why we call them trolls, LARPers, because it's a fucking game to them. So when you go to war and you lose friends, and then when you see American citizens thinking it's okay to do these kind of things, how do you think that makes us feel who have an understanding in context what this means? It's shitty. Because I want to train you, but I want to train you right. And so if the argument is, oh yeah, we're training people to be better prepared, what are you preparing them for? Like even if the worst case scenario for you was a tyrannical government overthrowing you, is that the right tactic? I'll tell you, as a fucking Green Beret Sergeant Major who plans counterterrorism operations for a living, that's the wrong strategy. That's the wrong tactic. If running around with an overt status with, you know, putting stuff in garbage bags and fucking, that's like your perception of how this works. You're profoundly misguided. And the only thing you're trying to do is get more and better analytics and reach an engagement. And that's what it boils down to, right? Because it's entertaining. That's what it is. I know, because I've had the conversations about this. That's exactly what it is. Because it's popular. Because if you're on Twitch, if you're a TikToker, if you're a video game guy, then this is what it translates to make it look cool. Not saying that it's not allowed. Not saying that I even have a problem with it, because I don't give a shit. But when you cross the streams of a game, of a sport, with the realities of how things work in this area of my expertise, then you're misguided. I'm willing to have a conversation even to educate you on how this works. Because like when you get a class, imagine that you're getting a class or a block of instruction from a car salesman who's telling you how to be a race car driver. How this Chevy 006 is going to make you a race car driver. How seriously do you take them? Versus you go to do a track experience and then you understand the technical aspects of how things really work from an experienced driver who's done it for real. Who are you listening to? I would just ask, in conclusion and wrapping up this hour, I would ask you as a consumer to take a step back, to think about statements like Dakota Myers, like Tim Kennedy, like my opinion on this, that doesn't have a short-sighted answer, by the way, because there's multiple levels and layers to this. But I want you to understand something, that the decision to take a human life, the responsibility to carry a live firearm to defend your family and yourself, is profound. And to take that and turn it into a business is a responsibility on the company, the owners of that company, and the employees of that company to do their best due diligence and making sure they're responsible. So where does their scale end? Exactly where it is right now. In a echo chamber of continued driving comments and feedback and bullshit going nowhere. Where do we scale? We're training families. We're training women. We're putting together a package to train children to be more responsible in the understanding of what it's like to be better prepared, not just with firearms, and fire safety, and what to do after an accident, and how to stop the bleed, and how to control your stress, and decision-making, and gun handling, and what the responsibilities and legalities are in drawing a pistol and a firearm. To think that you just don kit, you just run around, and that's how it works, you're misguided. I want to have the conversation with you. I want to educate you. I want to mentor you. You're not talking to a 20-something-year-old kid who started a Kydex business. Are there great things that this kid has done? Absolutely. But he's a miss. He's going down the wrong path if he's focused on criticizing and dividing our country. Instead, he needs to be focused on preparedness and his lane of expertise. Look, I train a dozen law enforcement agencies across the U.S., including federal government agencies, which I can't even talk about. I train 10,000 students, including men, women, and children, from everything to mobility, from self-defense, and first aid. I'm starting a learning management system to educate civilians and virtual learning to make it a better experience that's more tangible for their family. Because it's not about training a narrow demographic of people who think they're waiting on the government to go tyrannical. I already know how that works and rolls out. The great state of Utah won't let it happen with me and my family. And so do I need to think about that? Maybe. Do I need to prepare for it? Maybe. But what's my priorities? The day-to-day. The criminals who are going to carjack you or break into your home or murder you or rape you or destroy your lives forever. The vehicle accident that will injure you, that will take your family away in a flash. The natural or made man catastrophe that you don't see coming until it hits you in the face with a baseball bat, maybe literally. That's what I'm worried about. That's what I'm concerned about. And that's what my company is about. I'm sorry I'm speaking with so much more passion. I appreciate you guys listening to me. When I talk about these things, I get passionate about them because it's my life. It's not something that I even looked at to make money because I'm not a money guy. I don't look at the monetary gain of growing this company and making me wealthy as an individual. In fact, every penny of profit, I don't even take dividends in my own company. I reinvest it into my company and taking care of growing this entity that is Philcraft Survival because I want it to be broad spectrum. I want it to attract all walks of life, left and right. I'm glad you guys are listening to this. Naysayers, I hope I changed your opinion or at least gave you some education. Even the person who's probably going to listen to this who knows I'm talking about them, I won't even name you because I have a little bit of respect for you and I don't want to put you on blast. But I want to let you know where I'm coming from because I know the origins of where you came from. And I also know what you're doing to divide people because you're looking at analytics. I know you're an intelligent guy. I know you're surrounded by intelligent people that wants to do right. Doing right is not trying to divide us. Doing right is trying to bring us together and focus on preparedness. And what you're doing isn't that. Remember, lastly, I'll end it with this. This isn't a game, guys. This is life or death. When you got guys like Dakota Meyer who sacrificed it all, and he's living with the burden of surviving, that survivor's guilt, having that medal hung around his neck, you could take his opinion, but listen to the discussion and how he's framing it. I don't need to defend Dakota Meyer. He's a man. He could defend himself. I got too many things of value to focus on in the near future. And propelling this growth that is preparedness. But I will tell you, we need to have broader discussions. We need to stop snapshot judging each other, and we'll all be better off for it. I hope you have a good day. Thanks, guys. Peace.